halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the 44th annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner, featuring keynote speaker and Pro Football Hall of Famer Dan Marino. The dinner is coming up on Tuesday, June the 21st, and will also honor former Chicago Bears player and University of Manitoba Bisons product Israel Adonijé. To purchase tickets, visit RadyJCC.com or call 204-477-7513 for more information. I want to make note from Jets game day skate. Andre Pavlik, the starting goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, and there was some thought that Dustin Byfuglien, would he be healthy enough to play? Paul Maurice confirms that Dustin Byfuglien will be in the Winnipeg Jets lineup tonight, so there will not need to be an emergency recall from the Manitoba Moose. And Anthony Peluso apparently just has had, shoulder surgery and will be out 16 weeks.
Yeah, he's out for the
season. So he's out for the year, as
that's unfortunate.
Had already expected.
What about Kyle Connor, again, extending his point streak to 22 games? They've only got one game left in the regular season, and that breaks a record in the Red Berenson era. So Kyle Connor, 28 goals, absolutely tearing it up for Michigan.
Yeah, indeed. So some interesting news earlier in the week that may have gone a little bit under the radar is that the NHL is going to enter into broadcasts with Yahoo Sports. So four games a week will be broadcast, will be streamed live, free to all, you know, who can get online on Yahoo.com. You know, this is certainly a new avenue. We saw earlier in the year, where, or I guess the late 2015, where the NFL streamed one of their games exclusively online. It was one of the London games played overseas. And now the NHL is entering into that brave new era where they're going to stream four games free to anybody who wants to catch four NHL games live on Yahoo Sports.
Yeah, the interesting part is what, for the NFL game, they guaranteed advertisers 3.5 million viewers and got 15.2, so five times as much, which is quite shocking. This is a whole different ballgame, guys, moving forward here. I mean, first of all, the free aspect, Drew, catches me more than anything. Yahoo.com streaming games for free. I'm assuming this is restricted just to the United States audience and you can't obtain those games in Canada.
Yeah, that's not clear. I'm assuming the same thing, that because it's a partnership between the NHL, Yahoo, and NBC Sports.
Right.
So there's none of the Canadian rights holders involved. So I imagine it's strictly a U.S. thing, yes.
So, I mean, interesting as it relates to cable subscriptions, NHL plan subscriptions, and the fact that you mentioned it was free.
Mm-hmm. Well, because what you're seeing is people that, you want to make their product as available as possible to people. That's what they want. They want the convenience. They don't necessarily want to sit in front of their television. They want, with mobile technology, to be able to hold their game in their hand wherever they might be.
I sound old here. Can you watch a whole game on your, I guess you could on your iPad or like Surface or something, but
you can't watch it on your iPhone. It's too small to watch it on an iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, you can't watch a whole game. Are these people just coming in for parts of games? Like, I can't see. Don't you need a bigger screen if you actually want to watch the game? Or does everybody just sit there with the game in the background and tweet about it?
Well,
I
think that part of the viewing experience nowadays is to keep one eye on the game, one eye on your Twitter, and the interactive features there.
Well, if you've got one eye on Twitter and you're watching the hockey game, then you're probably not getting most of the hockey game. But
yeah, but that's never stopped people on Twitter before. With that NFL game, though, I remember it was. I think it started at 8:30 our time, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And Sunday morning, I was doing whatever I was doing. I did have it on my
fathering.
Phone.
Hashtag fathering.
Yeah, was I hashtag fathering at that point in time? I think I might have been about
October,
a month into hashtag fathering.
You know
at
when
that
your daughter
point
was
in time.
Born.
Yeah, my daughter was born in September, so I was fathering.
What
at that
time
point.
Of day was it?
That she was born?
Yeah.
It was 9:43 in the morning. You guys were on air. You announced it to the
what
city.
What was it like outside? Was it cloudy? Was it sunny?
We need a window in here to remember that.
Yeah, there's no windows in here. I couldn't tell you. But that game, that NFL game, I did watch it on my phone. I didn't watch every second of it, but I had it there and would glance at it on occasion. Now, I don't know. I think
So that was available to you then. So you wonder if there was no blackout for that.
The NFL was available. I don't think I'd be surprised if the NHL is going to be available because there's different rights holders. It wasn't a national broadcast. It was a local regionalized game. It was an experiment.
Well, it's changing. I mean, the consumption is changing so significantly now, and this is just another step in it, right, guys? I mean, a game on per week on the internet for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that is where this all goes. I mean, remember that NBC and Rogers signed up for long term for these NHL packages, and they only signed NHL, I think foolishly, only signed up one provider.
Sure.
In both countries. Interesting now that Yahoo makes its way into the mix here now in a partnership with NBC, is as you noted, Drew.
Yeah.
But you wonder where it goes and if there was a significant... Now, I don't think the states they overpaid as close to significantly as they did in Canada, but you wonder how much that effect on the media market here. You've already seen it a little bit this week, the effect on the media market on a go-forward basis.
It's... a very, I think it's an untapped area, and I don't think the NHL totally knows what to expect. And they figure, look, you know, our viewership in the U.S. is pretty low anyway, so what's the difference if we, you know, throw something available on Yahoo, and maybe somebody who would never turn into a hockey game is surfing the web, and they stumble upon it, and they click the link.
Absolutely.
So I don't see a downside from the NHL's perspective, particularly because it's not like the NHL is, you know, forcing NBC or forcing Yahoo into this sort of relationship. Yahoo and NBC have a relationship. The NHL and NBC have a relationship. So you might as well have a relationship between the NHL and Yahoo. You know, A equals B, B equals C, A equals C. Transitive properties.
But the idea of free content piques my interest. Like, is that going to be something that comes to Canada? Because conceivably right now, guys, you can't get any games for free.
You cannot. I think there's
one. You have to pay for your cable package or your satellite package. Yeah. And then from that, you pay a subscription fee, then you get the game. Or alternatively, you get the NHL package, which you pay for, and you get the games.
Is there not one game a week on NHL.com that you can stream for free? I was under the impression that NHL.com has sort of has a free...
This is saying four games a week.
Yeah,
huge
this is a much different.
Huge difference.
Huge difference. This is, you know, this is going to be, you know, a national TV broadcast just on your computer from
and
the NBC perspective.
They didn't clarify there. Are they having just simulcasting? Or the Yahoo broadcasters?
I'm sure it's just a simulcast. Yeah. I don't think that they're pouring that. I don't think they're pouring that many more resources into it.
The Flyers Lightning game, we should mention. I watched that game on Center Ice, but it was available streaming on Yahoo. I believe that was the first one, as Richie mentioned, for a week. There's another aspect of this. As you guys know, MLB Advanced Media purchased the NHL streaming media rights, and there was an article on Forbes Sports Money about this. That was the first time ever a sports league had purchased the media rights to another pro sports league. And even though this seems like, you know, this is just a small thing, this isn't a small thing, because by airing four hockey games per week, MLB Advanced Media is growing their digital platform, right? And making more money for the 30 major league baseball owners who own MLB Advanced Media, right? So again, there's two aspects to this. It's more free hockey for hockey fans in the U.S., which is great. I mean, that really is great. I think Yahoo deserves to be commended here. But there's also that aspect of MLB Advanced Media. We know the impact that they've had on NHL.com as well, right? So there's that other aspect that they're trying to grow their platform. And, you know, the third aspect is the NHL is making more revenue, even though I think that might be part of that deal that they signed with MLB Advanced Media. So, again, there's that kind of other aspect to it. I agree with you, Drew. The next frontier is digital. And whether you're a traditionalist and you watch hockey on your 50-inch, you know, flat-screen TV, or you watch it on your iPad, the reality is it gives you the option. If you're in an airport or sitting down at an airport,
for sure,
and you know, you have the ability to watch it on your iPad, something like that. So that's the frontier. There's a lot of money in digital content. That's where it's going.
A lot of people, I mean, there's tons of people who, you know, go on vacation or whatever, might not be in front of their TV, might not get the regional broadcasts, who tune in on their you know, mobile devices or on their, you know, laptops or whatever.
I'm talking on a regular basis. If you're not on the move all the time watching games, you know, in terms of, it's hard for me to pick up things if you're watching on a small, you know. Sure. But I understand traveling and you're in an airport or you're this and you're a cab.
The thought about Uber. ESPN in particular is getting absolutely killed by people who cord cutting, who are saying, you know, I don't need my cable packages anymore. You know, and ESPN, who gets, you know, I don't want to get into their finances, but that's how they get their subscriptions.
There are negotiations right now with Apple, right?
Sure, because they realize that people don't, you know, the cable isn't of interest in a lot of people. They want to be able to tune in to watch the one game that they have actual particular interest in.
But guys, there are a lot of people that watch hockey, baseball, basketball on their iPads or on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with Rich. I mean, I still need to see it on a 50-inch TV to truly appreciate it. Like, I like to have the surround sound, or I like to be out at a bar watching it. Sure. But the reality is more and more people are watching that, because that's just the day and age we live in, where people are kind of sitting on the couch or they're out at a friend's and they, okay, I can turn the hockey game on now on my iPad. It's just something that's available. So, again, this is something that I think we're going to see more and more. And to Richie's point, I think this is something that, you know, in Canada – I don't know if you're necessarily ever going to see free games, but maybe you're going to see, because of competition, you're going to see, you know, whether it's the big media companies or whatever, trying to entice people to subscribe with them by offering, you know, maybe one free game a week or something like that, right?
Well, I mean, I know that the national rights holder for the NHL in Canada, if you have a cell phone package with them, I'm pretty sure you get Game Center for free. You can get the entire NHL, you know, online, not on your TV, but online only. You can get it for free. So it's, you know, they certainly, it's all, you can't look at it in silos. Every, you know,
yeah,
your cable and your cell
phone. They're apparently losing a lot of money on the deal.
Well, that's their problem. That's their problem. They
well, but that goes back to free, Drew. Well, I know the free meaning they get advertisers who pay them, but free to the consumer, no subscription fee, which appears to be the way of the future. Can you make it work financially? And if you can't, you got 10 more years of that deal.
Yeah, and then that's where the NHL is going to be in some trouble there at that point in time.
Well, they're partners, right? So they have to make sure that the partner, I don't know, you might see other media outlets involved in the broadcasting of the games before this 12 years elapses.
Sure, they sublet, they give away or sell some games.
What's the cost of it? Are you still taking a loss on that anyways because the value has changed so significantly?
Yeah.
By consumer, the consumer consumption.
A very good question. It'll be interesting. I doubt we'll ever hear the numbers, but I'll be curious to see what Yahoo draws in terms of an audience on these games online.
You'll hear it.
You think you'll hear the numbers?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I think you'll hear it probably pretty quickly.
Well, I think you'll
hear... It just hits on the site, really. I mean, it's something you can... It happens in real time. I don't think you have to wait for anybody to give you... I mean, another factor, probably don't have to pay any of these rating systems.
Sure. I mean, you're cutting out the middleman in some degree. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Jonathan Drouin. He's back with the Tampa Bay Lightning organization. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I mean, he was disappointed, I'm sure, that the trade deadline a week ago came and went, and he's still property of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course he wanted to get traded and you know, have his NHL career restarted again with perhaps a contending team, a playoff team, whatever. He wanted fresh opportunity. Well, that didn't happen because the offers weren't good enough for Yzerman to make that move. So now this young man could have just sat back and said, okay, well, this year is a write-off. I'll just continue doing what I'm doing. Instead, he takes control, and he listens to what his general manager said.
That's Darren Dreger of TSN talking about Jonathan Drouin and his decision to return to the Tampa Bay Lightning organization, namely the Syracuse Crunch of the AHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I respect Darren Dreger wholeheartedly. He's one of the great insiders in the game. A little bit of some Jonathan Drouin apologist action going on there, a little bit, to my mind. You know how honorable it is for him to return to the organization that he walked out on, that he threw a hissy fit and he left. I mean, I don't know. I this whole thing seems like a real debacle and a stain on Drouin's character to me.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't handled well. We've debated on the show whether or not he's a good player worth acquiring and whether he could be, I guess, repaired, whatever maybe. But I don't think you can disagree with the fact. Well, maybe you can, but I would like to hear the rationale as to the tact and to the tactics that him and Alan Walsh have taken in this case. And I don't know if it's Alan Walsh's advice that Drouin has been following, but at the end of the day, Alan Walsh is the agent. He acts for the player, and it's the player's final decision, at least the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
So Alan Walsh certainly deserves blame here, but Jonathan Drouin makes a decision at the end of the day, and he deserves the most blame. And it was handled very poorly. Is it good that he finally reported? Well, it's better than not reporting at all. But he's now got to make amends. both in the AHL locker room and then in the NHL locker room. And I know there's been some talk about it. It's probably easier to make amends in the NHL locker room than the AHL locker
room. Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. The AHL guys are still battling for their spot up there, you know, and Drouin seemed to take his for granted and, you know, thumbed his nose at the entire organization.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I don't think that there's any doubt that Jonathan Drouin is a good hockey player. He was drafted third overall. He's the best is yet to come for him. He's only 20 years old. But to me, the biggest issue is, do you want to have a guy in your locker room who quits on his team? That is the biggest issue that I have. It's character. And character is a big thing in hockey. I mean, look at what the Jets went through with Evander Kane, right? Mm-hmm. He just wasn't a good fit for this team. And, you know, from all reports, he was good last night. He had an assist for Syracuse. Corey Pronman was there. We've had him on the show before. He said he wasn't dominant, but he looked pretty good in his first game back. So the question to me, Richie, is does this change Jonathan Drouin's ability to return with the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Like, does him going back to the AHL, playing the last few games with the Syracuse Crunch, does this change anything? Is Steve Yzerman still interested in holding on to him? I think it might change a little bit, but I still think you can't take back what happened. And we know the Tampa Bay Lightning were shopping Drouin a couple of months ago and even a couple of weeks ago leading up to the trade deadline. Does that change anything? I don't know the answer to that. You know, Steve Yzerman, Pat Verbeek, those guys know the answer to that.
Steve Yzerman wants to win. If Jonathan Drouin helps the team win, then I think John Cooper wants to win. I think he'll be in the lineup if they feel like though he can help them. I don't think there's going to be the principles in the way here.
They won't spite themselves, you don't think?
They don't know what's going to happen with Stamkos. He might leave. This might be their best chance, as we've talked about many times for a long time.
Do you think that
with all the contracts coming up for them in the next two, three years, or this starting this year, not saying window is closing by any means, but opportunity now with one of the best players in the league and Stamkos, who to me is going to be leaving, I think. Right. So if they have an opportunity, that's the thing about the Drouin trade. If they had a trade that was close to his value, I thought they would make it based upon the fact that they have a chance here. But if Drouin is better than their wingers on the bottom lines and there's injuries and they think he can help them, I don't think they're gonna avoid that. I mean, Steve Yzerman he's kind of like Bobby Clark that way. He'll do anything to win.
And Steve Yzerman, Richie, to your point, wasn't trading from a position of strength,
for sure.
Right? You're trading a guy after this controversial incident happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Rich. I think that there is a chance Jonathan Drouin stays with the Lightning. A month ago, I would have said there's absolutely no chance Jonathan Drouin remains a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. But to Richie's point, if they lose Stamkos, you're still talking about a guy that has tons of upside. I mean, when he was drafted, they were thinking, you know, this guy has 80, 90-point potential, right? And he struggled last year. He was in and out of the lineup when the Lightning made their run to the Stanley Cup Finals. He was a healthy scratch, and they didn't like his game in the defensive zone, and they told him that they want him to get better defensively in the AHL. And the AHL is a good league for him to learn that, right?
Sure.
And
it's the league that a lot of other NHLers have had to learn in.
It's not out of the realm of possibility, guys, that he gets called up for the playoffs.
It's not out of the realm of the possibility. I don't know. The fact, I see a lot of Jonathan Drouin apologists going around this week and saying, oh, look at all the guts it took him to make the call to call Steve Yzerman back.
I'm not apologizing,
by the
way.
I think that's...
Not me.
No, I'm not saying you guys
I was hard on him. I was hard on Jonathan Drouin. I thought that what he did was not professional at all.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, to Richie's point, I mean, these guys say, okay, well, let's see how Jonathan Drouin does here. Maybe we'll call him up, see how he reacts to this, see how he does in the dressing room. Well, they're basically giving him a second chance.
Yeah, that's true, Ezdy. You know, this is not a decision that Jonathan Drouin's going to look back on and be happy about, I don't think. And if he's doesn't take that approach, then he probably hasn't developed enough. But, I mean, he is a young kid. I think there's many teams willing to take a chance and see that he's maybe not as bad of a guy. We don't know. So I wouldn't look into acquiring the guy, depending on the costs and, you know, background checks and stuff, in terms of the kind of person he is. But this was a poor decision-making by him. And, again, his agent provided him with, I think, bad advice. Again, we don't know the discussions there. We know Alan Walsh is a bit of a loose cannon.
I think that it was... You know, I give the Lightning credit. I thought they handled it very well. I thought they handled it. They said, okay, you don't want to be here. Goodbye. And, you know, and then when he called, picked up the phone and said they'd like to come back. Okay, we're not going to, you know, hold grudges right now. We're not going to, you know.
It's not altruistic there.
I know it's not altruistic. I'm not saying it's altruistic.
It helps them if he plays and he plays well.
Of course it does. And it rehabilitates his value and everything else. I'm not saying that the Lightning are, you know, being, you know, godly here by any stretch of the imagination. But the fact that people are, you know, look how he's matured and how he had to call Steve Yzerman and how he had to, you know, he had to request to come back. And that's a sign that he's growing up and that he's learning from this incident. I don't buy that so much. I buy that, you know, the trade deadline passed. This is a kid who's stuck with no other options.
It's mutually beneficial here.
Actions speak louder than words, Drew. I agree with you. Same thing with, you know, Evander Kane. He's still young enough that he can turn it around in Buffalo with all the incident with the draft and sleeping in and all that. You have to give him the benefit of the doubt. Jonathan Drouin is young. Maybe he will learn from this and he will go on to become an excellent NHL player. I do think he has the potential to still be an awesome NHLer. I just don't know if he has necessarily grown up this quickly. We'll see what happens here in the next coming weeks, coming months, and then Tampa Bay will probably use that kind of as a probation period if they want to keep him around next year and going forward.
I can't believe that they're going to keep him around. I mean, I know that, you know, they might, but I mean, I look back at, you know, Vancouver, and it's a different situation altogether. But with Vancouver and Luongo and Schneider, they're trying to trade Luongo, they end up trading Schneider. Okay.
That was cap ramifications.
Of course. And I mean, this is not there's not a direct parallel here. But, you know, now Luongo's the number one goalie, and then they, you know, hunky-dory, everything's happy, and then, you know, the way they mishandled him, the way they didn't start him in that Heritage Classic game, gets traded.
It costs the GM his job.
I know.
And the two goalies are now on the East Coast, two of the best five goaltenders in the Eastern Conference. He's arguing the league right now.
Yeah.
So Steve Yzerman's worried about that. He doesn't want this kind of thing to cost him his job.
And I don't think – I agree. And I don't think Steve Yzerman is going to – I think Steve Yzerman is going to be smart about how he handles it. They're going to say the right things. He's going to try and rehabilitate Jonathan Drouin. But I don't think he's going to be long-term for Tampa Bay.
I agree. Steve Yzerman is sharp. Mm-hmm. He's certainly sharp, and he's done a real nice job in Tampa Bay. But he's not easing up on it. But he's, he's a little bit of
he's a hard ass.
He can be difficult.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. You know, Steve Yzerman's priority isn't, you know, to hold people's hands and make them feel good.
Well, I'm not so sure he's handled the star players in that team as maybe.
I think they mishandled Stamkos.
I don't know what happened with. Well, there's some stuff about happened with St. Louis as well, and that's if you don't want that. And if you consider Drouin to be the heir apparent there and the next star, you could argue that, based on some rumblings, the handling of three top-end guys has not been as good as you'd like it to be from an organizational perspective.
Yeah,
there.
And I'll grant your point, because Stamkos and St. Louis have done something in their careers. Jonathan Drouin hasn't done anything in his career. So if you're going to let the...
That's fair.
If you're going to let
distinction. It's the next guy.
Sure.
And I'm not saying... I'm not defending Drouin in this case, but I'm also saying that Stevie Yzerman isn't... it's not all wine and roses over there either.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think... I'm sure that...
I'm not so sure the perception isn't that, Drew.
No, I mean, I think that when they lose Stamkos for nothing at season's end, there's going to be questions pointed into why couldn't you get a deal done with Steven Stamkos? And I think that issue is going to look at the head coach, and it's going to look at Steve Yzerman, because that is a failure on Steve Yzerman as a general manager if he doesn't get a deal done with Steven Stamkos and he walks for nothing.
Steven Stamkos asked for the maximum contract for 8 years, and you have all these players to sign. You almost have no choice. You can't sign him.
No, I don't buy that. Steven Stamkos is better than all the other players on that team. You sign him. If your question is Nikita Kucherov or Steven Stamkos, it's Steven Stamkos. If your question is Tyler Johnson or Steven Stamkos, it's Steven Stamkos.
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I also think that there is some issues with the coach, with how Steven Stamkos was treated during the playoffs last year, not getting certain minutes in certain situations. I think it's a little bit more complicated than just money. I think money is a big part of it, because Steven Stamkos wants to be paid probably second to Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews.
Probably second to nobody, is he?
Or he wants to be the highest paid guy in the league. You could argue whether he is the best player in the league, but he certainly wants to be paid over $9.5 million a year, $10 million a year, whatever it is. And I don't disagree with you, Drew. If the Lightning lose Steven Stamkos for nothing to Toronto or whoever it is, it's going to be a very difficult thing for the organization to overcome, because Jonathan Drouin is a great prospect, but you're not going to be replacing Steven Stamkos with anybody, because there's nobody in the UFA market that's going to replace Steven Stamkos. There just isn't. He's a 60-goal scorer. I mean, how many 60-goal scorers are there out there?
There aren't.
It's got a no move, just so people don't know. Of course. It's got a no move. And so, but what? How did that all come about? I mean, there's too much there. To me, it seems like the writing's on the wall that he's leaving, but there's too much there that hasn't been said. Like, there's a story there.
There probably is. There's probably at least a short story or a book that can be written about what's going on behind the scenes.
Free Drew Andrew.
Yeah. No, thank you. Let's head to break. We'll bring in Denver Post Avs reporter Mike Chambers next to talk about the Winnipeg Jets opponent tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Third hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Mike Chambers. Mike covers the Colorado Avalanche for the Denver Post. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, fellas. Nice to be with you. Thanks.
Our pleasure, Mike. Brought you on to talk about the Avs, of course. They're making another visit to Winnipeg this evening. Avs currently in a dogfight with the Minnesota Wild for that final Western Conference wild card spot. 2 points up on the Wild. The Wild with a game in hand, of course. You know, if you look at the Avs and you look at the Wild, you know, is there anything in particular that you think is going to be the deciding factor over which of those two teams does get the final Western Conference playoff spot?
Well, I think the head-to-head game, the last game of the season between the teams, which is, I'm just looking at the schedule right now, it's the 26th, March 26th in Denver. Obviously, that's going to be key. It's an afternoon game in Denver. You know, head-to-head, the Wild has dominated the Avalanche over the last 2 years. So, you know, the winner of that game is going to obviously be big. But from here on out, the Wild has an advantage in terms of home games and road games. The Avs have a couple more roadies. You know, in terms of the row, obviously the Avs have two more wins in that department. And I think right now, if you compare the two teams, I would say that the Avalanche are probably playing a little better. I mean, this is a team that's probably coming off of their best or most complete win of the season, 3-0 over Anaheim on Thursday. So, you know, in terms of head-to-head of who's playing better right now, I'd certainly say the Avalanche.
Mike, the Avalanche were one of the more active teams before the February 29th trade deadline, acquiring Mikael Bodker from the Coyotes, which saw Alex Tanguay and some prospects go the other way, and they also acquired Eric Jelena from the New Jersey Devils. How would you rate the play of Bodker and Jelena? I know that Bodker's only played 5 games and Jelena's only played 3 games, but what have they added to this Avalanche team?
Well, I think you got to include Sean Matthias in that because they got him a couple days before the deadline, and he's been great. In 55 games in Toronto, he only had 6 goals. Now in 7 games here in Colorado, he's already got 3. He's been a big plus. Bodker has been good. It was another trade for a possible or a potential rental player because Bodker and Matthias are pending UFAs in July. So, and the Avalanche gave up a lot of good draft picks and prospects for those two guys. So in terms of those two deals, it was an expensive swing. In terms of Eric Jelena, he's been good. He's sat out 2 games because of a back injury, but he's playing on the third pairing. He's got a big shot at the blue line, and they're trying to use him on the power play. I think the jury's kind of still out on him. But he's a pending RFA, so the Avs have his rights for another year or so.
You know, Mike, in terms of goaltending, obviously, you know, what is happening there with the goaltending? The past four games, the performances of both Calvin Pickard and Semyon Varlamov have been very good. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think they want to continue to ride Varlamov, but Varlamov has been so inconsistent this year. He's pretty much been red hot or really bad. And the last time that he was really bad, Calvin Pickard came and started two games and played extremely well. His saves percentage in those two games, I think it was like 80. He stopped 89 and 94 shots. I think it was like 940-something saves. Mm-hmm. Despite that, they come back and give Varlamov another shot, and he wins two in a row and plays extremely well. So it's certainly a net that the Avalanche want Varlamov to have, but Pickard has been so good. Anytime that the Russian slips, the Avalanche certainly feel good about their goaltending with Calvin Pickard in there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Mike Chambers. He covers the Colorado Avalanche for the Denver Post. Mike, the Avs will be without Gabriel Landeskog tonight. He's serving the first game of a three-game suspension. You know, he said he was embarrassed about the hit, you know, on Anaheim defenseman Simone Dupre, that, you know, it was a dumb thing to do. You know, he's a repeat offender, so that, I mean, there's certainly a history there with Landeskog. Does he need to change anything about his style of play, or is this just sort of, you know, him maybe need to rein it back a little bit and not take these, you know, suspendable penalties?
He needs to act more like the captain that he should be. Quite frankly, he's that hit the other night, there was just no reason for it. I don't know what else to say, but it was a real uncaptain-like move to get suspended and to make a hit like that. I mean, he could have got more than three. I mean, if the player got hurt, I'm sure that the punishment is, you know, four or five games. But it was just a bad hit. There was no reason for it. And Landeskog apologized and stuff like that. And quite frankly, he should, because it's there's 13 games left in the season, and this team is clawing for a playoff spot, and their captain gets suspended for three games. So, yeah, he's sorry, and he should be. But, you know, he's out for three games, and obviously they're three critical games.
You know, Mike, you mentioned that the Avalanche are clawing for a playoff spot. They're fighting with the Minnesota Wild right now for that last wild card spot. And, you know, we talked about Gabriel Landeskog, who's serving the first game of a three-game suspension. As you know, this is such a young team. And every time I look at this Avalanche team, I am constantly impressed with Jarome Iginla. And he's on pace for another 20-goal season. He's got 19 goals now. It's incredible. I was looking it up. This is going to be his 17th 20-goal season. The question for you is, how important is it to have a guy like Jarome Iginla on this team with all these young players? I mean, we know that Jarome Iginla has slowed down and he's been relegated to the third line at times, but he seems to just keep producing. How is important for, you know, this team? They're trying to get into the playoffs, but a lot of these guys don't have that much playoff experience.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think the Avalanche certainly know that they have something special in Iggy. Obviously, he's a great veteran, a guy that's outstanding on the power play. Hang on a sec here, guys. I got to sign out my. I got a room tab here for breakfast.
What'd you order?
Yeah, what was for breakfast?
It's just an omelet.
Okay, well, an omelet, nothing wrong with that.
There you go. If you could sign that out. Thanks.
This is the best.
Sorry.
Yeah, do you have any coffee there, Mike?
Yeah, I got some coffee. I got an omelet. I'm all set to go here.
No, hash browns, home fries. You know what's going on with the potato?
True, not your breakfast. His breakfast.
Well, I'm going with the wheat toast here.
Ah, okay, smart.
It's a healthy decision. You know, Mike, looking at this team, coaching wise, and you talk about the kind of the management of goaltenders and how you got some good performance so far. Of course, Patrick Waugh being a former netminder. Is the pressure on Patrick Waugh here at all? to maybe prove that his capabilities as a coach are more in line with his first year behind the bench rather than last year? Or are him and Joe Sakic so well aligned that there really isn't that much pressure on him?
Yeah, I think there is. I certainly feel that the first year was the type of hockey that this team obviously wants to play every year, and last year is the exact opposite. I think the team as a whole should be somewhat in the middle. I think that they expect to be a 100-point team. In terms of the relationship between Juan and Sakic, I think that it's unique in that if Patrick Waugh fails, I think Joe Sakic fails. And I think this was a team that if one goes, I think both are going to go. But right now, I don't think that should be considered the case at all. I think Patrick is on good ground here in Colorado. Obviously, his third year, he's in the hunt for the playoffs. His team has improved a lot. And I think as a GM, you have to sit back and say, well, have we improved? And certainly Waugh's got this team on a decent path. And if they make the playoffs, I think he'll certainly be back and perhaps even have an extension in mind.
Mike, we'll let you get to your omelet after this last question here. If you look at the Avalanche schedule, and you talked about the one game remaining against the Wild, and that's 2 weeks from today. Starting tonight, the Wild play five straight games against non-playoff teams. Mm-hmm. Then they have that Wild game, and then they finish the year with seven straight games all against playoff teams to wrap up the season. You know, is this an Avalanche team that is aware? Are they, do you get the sense that they are aware of the schedule and that they have, that this right now, the next two-week period is really their make-or-break opportunity given the seven, eight games at the end of the year all against playoff teams where the schedule really gets tough right down to the end of the year?
Yes, I know that they've talked about it. These upcoming four games all in Canada against teams that won't make the playoffs is a key stretch. And it's a stretch that, they feel good about because this is a pretty good road team, boys. These guys typically play better on the road than at home and have been pretty good in Canada all year. So certainly these next four games, including tonight, is a stretch that the Avs feel really confident about. So we'll see what happens.
Mike Chambers covers the Colorado Avalanche for the Denver Post. He's a part-time omelet aficionado. Mike, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hopefully you left a good tip there, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll see you later on. Take care, Mike. Thanks very much. It's head to break. when we come back, we'll look at the Eastern Conference playoff race. It's heating up between the Red Wings, the Penguins, and the Flyers. We talk about it next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, the final night in town, Kelly Taylor in town. Brian Munn's approved performance by Kelly Taylor. Munsey was at Rumors last night tweeting about the show I saw. And so Kelly Taylor, a good Saskatchewan boy like Munsey.
Yep.
So the two of them, if you're looking for something to do tonight, there are very few tickets available for Kelly Taylor tonight at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. And some great upcoming shows, of course. Steve-O, who you know from Jackass, he's going to be there. The Winnipeg Comedy Festival is coming up, so some great comedians there as well. Come check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
I think Kelly Taylor listens to Munsey do color on Jets broadcast.
Probably. I don't know. Not sure where you're going with
that. Because Munsey went to go see Kelly Taylor. So
the reciprocating, you think?
Yeah.
I assume so. Why not?
Yeah.
We'll go with that. Eastern Conference playoff race. For a while there, it seemed like it was going to be fairly cut and dry in the Eastern Conference, but lo and behold, here come the Philadelphia Flyers, who are now only 2 points behind the Detroit Red Wings and only 3 points behind the Pittsburgh Penguins with a game in hand on both teams. This is a Flyers team that's, you know, been a little bit beat up, a little bit injury bug, you know, as of late. I think they're without Jakub Voracek, if I'm not mistaken. And is Sean Couturier still out of the lineup? I think he might be out of the lineup there in Philly as well.
Oh, he was back, actually.
He's back.
Yeah,
okay. Well,
played last night. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he was out of the lineup. And all of a sudden, this Philadelphia Flyers team, you know, rookie NHL head coach Dave Hakstol, they're making a push to the playoffs, trying to sneak into the final Eastern Conference playoff spot. You think the Flyers are going to be successful? You know, is this turning into a three-way race legitimately between the Wings, the Penguins, and the Flyers for that final playoff spot?
Well, it's nice to see Dave Hakstol doing well. We've had the opportunity to meet him. We're very familiar with him, with his time at UND.
Sure.
And, you know, it's a great story because we were talking about it a couple of Mondays ago at the trade deadline. They didn't make any moves, and Philadelphia was one of those teams that you thought maybe they'd move a player or two and try to, you know, because they were one of those teams that they weren't completely out of it, and they didn't do anything. And I think they've won 4 or 5 since the trade deadline. And, you know, Dave Hakstol, you got to give him a lot of credit. And, you know, you're watching this team, and everybody knows how good Claude Giroux is, and Voracek's out of the lineup right now. He's been hilarious on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen his tweets after the Flyers win, but it's very, very funny. Claude Giroux's been excellent. For me, one of the biggest differences for the Flyers this year has obviously been the defense. I mean, the defense has been amazing. Shane Gostisbehere has been excellent as a rookie defenseman for them. You know, everybody knows the numbers he's putting up. But also, they went out and they acquired Michael Neuwirth. And they've got a great 1A, 1B goaltending tandem there. Steve Mason was excellent. Almost got the shutout last night. Tampa Bay got a late goal. Brian Boyle scored with Ben Bishop pulled. But another guy, I got to bring this up. Another guy that's been excellent is Braden. You know, speaking of Saskatchewan boys, is Braden Schenn. And Luke Schenn was traded earlier in the season. And Braden Schenn, since January 1st, has 29 points in 31 games. It's incredible. And he's a guy, you know, he was involved in the trade that came coming over from the LA Kings. He's always a guy that they envisioned as a second line center, and he's played wing sometimes, and they've moved him back to center. But to me, he's another guy who's been a key for them. You mentioned Couturier's missed a lot of hockey this year. He's a guy that's usually penciled in as the third line center, great player. But Schenn is a guy that I think is a very underrated player, and maybe that's because he struggled a little bit, but he's always put up decent numbers, whether he's been on the second line or third line, wing or center. So to me, he's been very good. And, you know, you got to look at, you know, they've brought Andrew McDonald back up, Richie, after he was down in the AHL for most of the year. The defense has been a lot better in the goaltending, and that was the Flyers' problem last year. They weren't getting secondary scoring, and even a guy like Sam Gagner chipped in with a goal yesterday, and he's kind of been inconsistent. They got rid of LeCavalier earlier in the season. It's just a well-coached team, and they're playing a really good system under Dave Hakstol, and you got to give them credit. I mean, they do have a tough schedule coming up. They're 2 points behind the Wings, 3 points behind Pittsburgh, but they've got a game in hand.
Well, and they also have, if you want to make the case for the Flyers to be one of those playoff teams, is that of their remaining 16 games now, you know, 5 of them are against either the Penguins or the Red Wings. They play the Penguins 3 times over the course of the last month here, and they play the Red Wings twice. So, you know, the Flyers, if they could take care of business against those two teams, would be in good shape. But the same goes, of course, for the Penguins and the Red Wings in that sense. So, Richie, you know, you look at the schedules, you look at everything, you know, do you expect that it's going to end up being the Flyers, and are they going to, you know, could the Red Wings, could they, you know, end the, what is it, 24 straight years that the Red Wings have been a playoff team?
It's very possible. I mean, the way Philadelphia is playing right now and buying in, I think it's, you know, you could say likely, or at least a very good shot. I'm surprised by this, guys. Like, you look at the Philadelphia roster, and Nancy talks about a lot of the strong points of the roster, but let's be honest here. I mean, that defense, Shane Gostisbehere has been incredible with his offensive performance, but that defense is not very good. Goaltending, as he also mentioned.
But it's better than it was last year.
But it's still not very good. And that's the thing, like, I've been impressed by, is this team, and you think about it, okay, so you have Sanheim, Provorov, you know, what happens with Sam Moran? These guys, you've had first-round picks on the back end. Gostisbehere is exceeding expectations, okay? Mm-hmm. And you think about that, that's the back end you have coming up. And I don't like their back end right now, but they've invested in it for the future, kind of like Carolina has.
Yep.
And you look at their draft picks, and this speaks to Ron Hextall, who's done a very nice job there. You look at their draft picks this season, they have a first rounder, they have 2 seconds, and they have 2 thirds, and they have 2 sixths, and they have all their other picks. The following season, they have a first, a second, and 2 thirds, and 3 thirds, sorry. So think about that. And how Hextall's been able to get this squad selected by Ron Hextall. Hextall's been able to get this squad to play the way they have. There's been some injuries. They don't have a great back end. Their goaltending was a question mark. It's obviously been better lately. And he still has his team playing hard. Mm-hmm. And they're set up for the future, both in prospects and in draft picks. Again, a big picture, this team's going in the right direction. And right now, if you take a snapshot of the team, they're going the right direction. So you have to be encouraged if you're a Flyers fan.
Should there be talk about Hextall for the Jack Adams?
100%, if they make the playoffs, for sure. No question.
Well, they haven't been in a playoff spot for most of the season. So if they end up coming back and making the playoffs, and by the way, Drew, I've said this before, I don't think making the playoffs should be a prerequisite for getting the Jack Adams nomination. It seems like every year the coach has to make the playoffs. I think, let's say Dave Hextall and the Flyers finish 1 point out of the playoffs. Sure. Does that not mean that Dave Hextall did an excellent job? I mean, come on. But I mean, usually it's the case. Same thing with the Norris going to the defenseman who has the most points. We've all agreed that, you know, that's kind of ridiculous. But you look at this team and they've just stayed with it, and they didn't make any moves at the deadline. They've continued to win games. They're playing a Lightning team, you know, who's fighting for the division lead with the Panthers right now. And, you know, the Flyers looked really good last night. And, you know, we tried to have Dave Isaac on. Unfortunately, he was having some flight delays,
issues,
so he couldn't come on. Dave Isaac, of course, covers the Flyers for the Courier-Post newspaper.
The Jets play the Flyers not this coming week, but the week after. So we'll have Isaac on probably next week or so.
Really good guy. Does an awesome job covering the Flyers. And, you know, we were going to ask him, you know, about Voracek, but it looks like Voracek is going to come back next week.
Mm-hmm.
Look out. I mean, Voracek is one of their top players. Giroux has also been a point-a-game player over the last couple months. He had a terrible start to the season, as did a lot of Flyers. I agree with Richie. I mean, this Flyers defense is not a top 10, maybe not even top 15 defense, but, you know, they can move the puck. A guy like Medvedev has moved the puck. A guy like Brandon Manning, I think, has been underrated, kind of more of a stay-at-home guy.
Yeah, Radko Gudas keeps injuring opponents.
Radko Gudas stays out of the penalty box, he's a decent stay-at-home physical defenseman. But needless to say, guys, when you match up that defense against teams like Washington, against the Rangers,
That's a terrible defense.
The Flyers are going to have problems if they make the playoffs and they face one of those teams, right? It could be Tampa Bay. In the first round. So, I mean, this Flyers team isn't necessarily going to be a Stanley Cup threat, but look at the schedule, and they have a lot of games coming up. I think they have 5 back-to-backs coming up, if I'm not mistaken, to end the season, which is ridiculous. And I think all 5 of those...
Play back-to-back tonight. They played last night. Yeah. They play tonight. They play Tuesday. They play Wednesday. They play the following Monday and Tuesday. And then they have another Saturday, Sunday. And then... They finish the year on Sunday, the 10th of April. That's a makeup game? Because the season's supposed to end on the 9th. I think is that a makeup game from
the
storm?
Yeah, the storm in Washington, right? Is that what it was?
No, it's the Islanders. So they play, you know, they're going to be playing their 82nd game, regardless, apparently, if it matters or not, on Sunday, April 10th. So it is going to go right down to the wire, potentially, if they're going to be in the Eastern Conference playoff race. It could go down to the extra day of the NHL season.
Drew, they're playing a lot of teams that are currently in playoff spots, right? Like, over the majority of their games are against teams that have a higher winning percentage than them. So it's going to be tough. But the way they've played lately, I mean, it's starting to look like the Philadelphia Flyers team from 3 or 4 years ago. You have guys like Wayne Simmonds and Braden Schenn who are excellent on the power play, and Giroux is really good in all situations. We were talking about him as possibly being a candidate for the World Cup of Hockey Canadian team. So, I mean, and they're getting goaltending. If Mason isn't doing well, he is doing well right now. But if he's not doing well, Neuwirth has been in there. They've basically split games this year.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got 2 good goaltenders. And they're not an easy team to play against. I mean, they've got a lot of grit on that team. And then you throw in guys like Sam Gagner who have something to prove, you know, playing on the third line there. I would be, if I was the Penguins and Red Wings, I would be, and I bet they are, they're probably pretty scared looking down the standings. at the Flyers, who just keep winning.
Yeah, well, it's yesterday was an all-important. The Flyers take care of business in Tampa. The Penguins take care of business against the Blue Jackets, a team they've had a lot of difficulty with. Although the Penguins, looks like Malkin might be out of the lineup going forward. Left the game yesterday with an upper body injury, so that's something that's going to be... he was holding his arm, and it was dangling, so it didn't look like a very good injury for the Penguins. If they lose Malkin for a significant period of time, watch out. Things are going to get a little bit hairy there in Pittsburgh. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL. There are some injury notes, some signings. We'll talk about it all coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Programming note, NHL this week. After our one-week hiatus, it returns, I believe it's this coming Tuesday at 6 p.m. on this fine station. The Jets are in action in Vancouver and then in Calgary this week. So we'll tee it up and look back and everything else, all that fun, coming up Tuesday with NHL this week, 6 p.m. on this fine station. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. And if you're looking for Jets and Moose news, it's available on IllegalCurve.com. Gents, let's look around the NHL. There was a number of signings, some injuries involving some playoff teams. Let's start with the St. Louis Blues. This came out late yesterday evening. They re-sign Carl Gunnarsson, defenseman, to a three-year $8.7 million contract extension. It's a salary cap hit of $2.9 million per year, a slight drop in pay based from the three-year contract that's about to expire. Your thoughts on the Blues re-upping Gunnarsson for 3 years at $2.9 per season?
I mean, if you see him rounding out kind of your top four on the left side, you're not as strong as you are on the right side. The $2.9 is really not going to hurt you much. Basically the same deal. He's 29 years old, defenseman, 30-33. I wouldn't have a huge issue with it. Those aren't the contracts to make or break your roster. And he's fine. I mean, he's nothing special. He moves the puck all right. And, you know, he's a pretty smart defenseman. I think that's probably his strength. And he plays a fairly simple game. And I think they like that. And his ability to be mobile, move the puck, is an asset that they find. But he's not someone you rely on a night-in, night-out basis to be your dominant D. So if you're able to kind of solidify your left side behind Jay Bouwmeester, knowing on your right side you have Pietrangelo, Shattenkirk, and Parayko, and that something may happen with one of those three, you know, in the offseason, but possibly moving out of contract, I think you feel okay about it.
Yeah, you're right, Richie. Carl Gunnarsson is definitely not a dominant defenseman, but he's a very serviceable defenseman. And yeah, if you remember, he spent many years with the Toronto Maple Leafs, oftentimes in a top pairing role, and he's not a top pairing defenseman.
No, but
as you mentioned, they're weaker on the left side, and you know, we still don't know if Kevin Shattenkirk is going to factor into the long term plans. Right, he's got a year left on his contract, but he makes a lot of money. Colton Parayko has been a great rookie defenseman for them, a big guy who's chipped in offensively, and that defense still looks very good heading into the playoffs. I still look at this Blues team, and you know, we mentioned Gunnarsson and Bouwmeester and Pietrangelo, and their defense is the strength of their team. But the forward depth is also there, guys, and they've had injury issues. But you know, Jaden Schwartz is back now. Patrick Berglund is back now. They've kind of slipped a little bit under the radar, I should say. And I wouldn't pick them to beat the Chicago Blackhawks in a 7-game series. But you have to wonder: is this the year that they do get the goaltending? Because that's always the question mark.
Well, I'm not necessarily convinced about that, but they're 1 point out of first place, and if they can get first place, they can avoid the Blackhawks in the first round, and maybe Dallas knocks them out. Because if St. Louis gets first place, Dallas would play Chicago in the first round.
And there's no team. I mean, I think they're it's most important of all the teams in the Western Conference that St. Louis wins the Central Division and avoids Chicago in that first round battle.
It's always a war between the two teams, but for just a fan perspective of taking away the rivalries, the quality of hockey and high scoring element of a Dallas-Chicago series would sure be enticing.
Yeah, well, it certainly would be. I mean, the you know, playoffs are always great. I mean, but you're right. That would be an exciting back and forth series. You mentioned the Chicago Blackhawks. They sign Marcus Kruger to a 3-year contract extension earlier in the week. My computer's freezing, so I can't tell you exactly how much it's worth. Here it is. It's an average annual value of $3.083 million for Kruger. Blackhawks, you know, your thoughts on the Kruger? He sort of took a discount this year in order to get paid sort of 3 years after.
And he's been injured. He's coming back into the lineup. They've been playing Andrew Shaw as a center, but they prefer him as a winger on the third line and even the fourth line. Kruger is a guy that he's penciled in, and he plays for the fourth line center role, Richie. Mm-hmm. And he's usually with Shaw and Andrew Desjardins, and they were great in the playoffs last year. He's got two Stanley Cups now. Mm-hmm. The problem that I have, or I guess I'd be concerned if I was Stan Bowman, and he's a very smart guy. He's obviously managed to keep the core together, Rich, but I mean, you're not going to have any other room to sign anybody else. Yep. So basically, you're going to count on, you know, basically guys on PTOs or signing guys to million-dollar contracts, right? Because Panarin is under contract for one more year after this year, and you have a lot of guys that are under contract. I think they have 15 guys that are under contract, but you're still going to have to sign some depth forwards and maybe a depth defenseman or two, right? Yeah. So they're really not leaving themselves a lot of cap room, but Stan Bowman seems to do this every year.
They're going to have $7 million, give or take.
I should say he has to do it every year.
They're going to have $7 million to sign the last seven players on the roster. It's not an easy task.
And that's what they're going to do. They're going to sign guys like Lee Stempniak to PTOs, right? Yeah. Or Brad Boys, guys like that.
So Kruger, Rich, I mean, he's obviously more than what you see if you just look at the stat page, given that he's got one assist all season long in 33 games. So why is he so valuable for the Blackhawks that they're willing to give him, you know, the $3 million a year for the next 3 years?
Well, he does the little things, Drew, right? I mean, he doesn't play on the power play at all, but he's the leading ice time forward in terms of penalty kill that allows the top players, and if you look at the way the Chicago Blackhawks play their top guys, I mean, guys like Patrick Kane don't kill penalties, right?
Sure.
So you can have a guy who's really, he does the little things really well, and he was a loyal soldier. So I think if this one, you can't necessarily look at it in a vacuum for the $3 million here, because you mentioned that kind of deal he took to make sure this offseason, to make sure that they were cap compliant. So he's getting paid, I think, for being a good soldier. But you want to have strength at the middle. And you want to have guys who can do different things. And he, you know, he's a smart player and does the little things for you. And they don't need the offense from him. That's another thing. So they're happy with the production they get from a guy like that. I know there certainly would have been interest from other teams in a guy like Marcus Kruger in terms of his ability to contribute to a roster and not need a ton of ice time and not need to be relied on scoring. So I think this is a good signing. I know it does squeeze some of their other players. What happens with Bickle? Are they able to get a little bit creative on other guys? Mm-hmm. There's not too much room there, but Stan Bowman's going to tiptoe, and he's going to say, okay, I'm going to sign my core guys. This is a little bit different in the sense that he signed Artem Anisimov earlier in the year to $4.5 million cap it, I believe it is. $4.5 million cap it.
Yeah.
And now you got Kruger. So you got these $3 million players. They didn't always have $3-4 million players when you were kind of going top end and then lower level. But at the same time, I think you're probably going to see something happen with Bickle in the offseason. And you still have guys like Panarin and Teravainen on cheap deals for next season. So it's one of those things we'll probably worry about when he has to worry about it.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about Panarin and Teravainen. We won't know this until later on, about any overages, any bonuses that they reach that, I mean, I don't know what bonuses are in their contracts.
Well, there's going to be some, you'd have to think that Panarin's going to hit a lot of bonuses.
That's right, so which is going to get added to their salary cap figure for next season.
That's correct, yeah.
And so that might even reduce their what they have available for the last seven guys of their roster. And that's something we'll talk about in the off season when that becomes more clear, you know, to us as to what the, you know, what the damage really is going to be for the Blackhawks.
Andrew, at the end of the day, they're keeping their core together.
Sure.
So you're talking Hard Taves, to argue with you're it. Talking Kane, you're talking Hossa, Seabrook, Keith, yeah. Crawford. I mean, if you're able to keep that core together and you obviously can throw in Panarin and Teravainen on cheap deals, as Richie mentioned, as part of the younger core of that team. And, you know, Andrew Ladd looks like he's a rental player. Mm-hmm. But they're able to kind of every year, if they need to move this contract or that contract, they can do that. Bickle, they've been trying to trade for a year now. I mean, he makes too much money for a guy that just doesn't play a lot and whose skills have diminished, right? But they seem to always find a way to make it work. And Kruger, if you remember, didn't sign. He signed a 1-year deal, and he didn't sign that deal until, I believe, early October. So they had to move some pieces around. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a quid pro quo going on there. There was a wink and a nudge deal there that, you know, let us take care of something and we'll take care of you. And then obviously this is the payback with the big 3-year contract.
In terms of the bonuses, Drew, it doesn't look like Teravina will hit many, if any at all. Mm-hmm. Looks like Panarin is going to hit a ton of them.
We'll see.
He's already hit a ton of them.
Sorry, I mean, we'll see what the effect of that is.
The Calder favorite.
Yeah, no, we'll see what the effect of those bonuses are on the salary cap. Sticking in the Central Division, Dallas Stars lose defenseman Jason DeMare for the next 6 weeks. Heading into the playoffs, certainly he's going to be out. We'll see how quickly he's able to heal, of course. Significant loss for a back end that is, thin to begin with. Can the Stars handle the loss of DeMare, or is this going to end up costing them in the first round?
Well, I don't know if he can be out for the first round. You know, these guys miraculously appear in the playoffs begin, right?
It's a 12-week injury, and he returned after 3 weeks. What a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, without Klingberg now and without him, you have certainly some injury issues. Demers being more significant. Your right side is hurt significantly. Mm-hmm. And the thing Demers does well is he moves the puck well. And their team relies on that puck moving from the back end to be able to produce up front. And, you know, you add a guy like Russell who is able to make a nice first pass too, but also block shots, can play defensively. I think that's a pretty big loss. I do. It's going to put some pressure on a guy with Patrick Nemeth, and you're going to have a Steven Johns up there right now. I don't think Lindy Ruff wants to rely on those guys at this time down the stretch competing for the first spot in that division and avoiding St. Louis or Chicago in the first round. And then likely the winner of that division will avoid Nashville as well, because you're going to play the worst team in the conference, which would be in the playoffs, which would be Colorado or Minnesota. So that's a tough one for them. DeMare is a really respectable right side offensive puck moving defenseman. I don't love his defensive game. I think he roams around too much. Sometimes he makes bad reads, but for what they do, he's very valuable.
And boy, are those Chris Russell and Johnny Oduya acquisitions looking really good right now. Uh-huh. It's a significant loss, and you hope that Demers is able to come back at some point in the first round if they're able to get out of the first round. Richie, I agree with you. I mean, they're definitely going to miss these guys. Klingberg's going to be out less than than he's not going to miss as much time.
I think he's day-to-day.
He's day-to-day. And so, I mean, you're going to miss these guys, but it's still one of the top offenses in the league. And I think, a guy like Jamie Oleksiak, he's been a young defenseman. He's been given time here, and he's been in and out of the lineup, and he's a guy that they'll count on more. He's on the right side, but Rich mentions a guy like Patrick Nemeth. They're going to miss Demers, but certainly, this is still a very formidable team. So again, you're always going to miss that type of defenseman, but I think, now that Chris Russell acquisition is looking even better because he's playing top pair right now with Goligoski.
One other significant injury, this happened to the New York Islanders. They lose number one goaltender Yaroslav Halak for a similar 6-week period. He's out with a knee injury. The Islanders are set to play the Rangers in the first round right now of the Metropolitan Division playoffs. Obviously, this is a real brutal blow for an Islanders team.
It is a tough blow to lose Halak, but Thomas Greiss is
has good numbers this year.
Yeah, and maybe this is his coming out party. So I don't think Yaroslav Halak is that great, and I wouldn't panic just yet. Yeah. I think Greiss could grab the bull by the horns here and may end up proving to be just as good, if not better, for this squad. So certainly you want the depth, and if you're left with backup guys who aren't capable, then you're going to be in trouble against a team like the Rangers. But Thomas Greiss may be an opportunity for him to prove his worth.
Yeah, and Thomas Greiss is a guy that I've always liked. He's 30 years old now. He's been around for a while, played in Germany, played a little bit with the Sharks, if you guys remember, before Pittsburgh and the Coyotes. He's got as many wins as Yaroslav Halak has this year. And, you mentioned his numbers. His numbers are very good, 930 save percentage, which is second overall in the league, actually. Goals against 2.23, which is top 10. I think it would have been a bigger loss if Greiss hadn't played much this year. He's already played 30 games this year. So I don't think they're going to miss out as much on Halak. It's not like the Canadiens losing Carey Price.
Right.
And this Islanders team, I mean, we saw them recently here in Winnipeg. They didn't play very well and still beat the Winnipeg Jets. They are coming off of a really good road trip where they won almost every game. Mm-hmm. So this Islanders team, I still wouldn't count them out. And I know going into the Rangers series, if it is the Islanders and Rangers, the Rangers are going to be favored by many, but this Islanders team, you still have a lot of weapons there with Tavares and Okposo. you know, and Travis Hamonic obviously is an excellent defenseman, so I still wouldn't count them out.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to forego rapid fire this week to talk about an important charity event that is coming up next weekend. It's the Trek for Tourette. Our good buddy Aaron DeGroote is in studio to join us to talk about the event coming up next week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Tight pants points hollering out.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, reminder, 3 o'clock this afternoon, Hustler and Lawless will be on air, followed by Rick Ralph, and then the coverage of the Jets and the Avalanche tonight from MTS Center, the Avs' final visit to Winnipeg. Fifth in 5 meetings between these two teams on the season. As you heard during the commercial break, we're proud supporters of the Riverview Health Center Foundation. We've had a strong charitable event or a strong charitable bent to this program from the day we started. That continues with our next guest. Aaron DeGroote joins us here in studio to talk about next Sunday morning's Trek for Tourette, an event in support of Tourette. Tourette. Okay, I'm already so in support of Tourette Canada's Trek for Tourette is going around. Aaron, thanks for joining us, of course. And our sister station, 103.1 Virgin Radio, is going to be there. They're proud supporters of the event. You mentioned Mandy Hsu from our sister station is going to be there.
Yep.
So talk about the event. It's happening next Sunday at Assiniboine Park. You know, talk about Tourette syndrome. You know, what's the event all about?
Well, the event is really intended to raise awareness and raise funds, of course, for people affected with Tourette syndrome. Tourette syndrome is a neurological disorder characterized by multiple motor tics, vocal tics, and it's very involuntary when these tics happen. Think of yourself as when you have to sneeze or you have a really bad itch. Think about that sensation that you get and think about trying to hold that in. It's pretty tough. So typically, you know, the people affected by Tourette will have uncontrollable tics with their eyes, blinking, head movement. It can be a vocal tic, although a vocal tic is very rare, contrary to, you know, how the movies play it out. So this is a disorder that affects about a 1 in 100 Canadians. So it's very prevalent. And it's often associated with a lot of other disorders. It rarely comes alone. So somebody who's affected by Tourette, you know, can have some other disorders, including anxiety, ADHD, OCD, and even autism and some learning disorders are associated with it. So I think it's a really good time to start the conversation about Tourette, raise some awareness. There's been a lot of awareness lately on depression and a lot of the things associated with it. So, you know, this ties into it. And I think, you know, with the amount of people that are affected, this is a really good time to talk about it.
Aaron, I know you and your wife, Julie, have been involved with this for many years, and we've always promoted it on this show. And I'm going to be actually participating next Sunday, March 20th.
You are a celebrity guest appearance next Sunday.
Hang on. Before you ask the question, are you planning on running? Or are you walking? Or
I want to know that, too.
Yeah. Are you going to do the 5K run? Are you going to do the 10K run?
I'm probably going to do the walk just because I haven't been really preparing for this event. Mm-hmm. I haven't been doing a lot of running. You know, the winter, a lot of hockey. You know, there's a lot of sitting down on the couch, as you know, Aaron. But
when you say a lot of hockey, you mean a lot of watching hockey, right?
Do you have a hoverboard, Aaron, available for?
Oh, goodness.
What about a motorized golf cart?
Back to the event here. I want to get into the event. For those who don't know how to join and if they want to participate and donate, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, and that's really what I'm here to talk about. The event's next Sunday at Assiniboine Park. We're meeting at the Duck Pond. If you would like to participate, we need you to sign up and register. You can go to Tourette.ca if you want to register for the walk or if you want to make a donation. And if you want to get into a run, it's actually a timed event put on by the Running Room. So you can go to runningroom.com and sign up for either the 5K or the 10K run. We typically get some competitive runners out there. So Winnipeg running community, the weather has turned. It's a great time to get out there and start training. So we really, really encourage you to do that.
The event, of course, is the Trek for Tourette. It's next Sunday at Assiniboine Park, 8 a.m. start time if you're looking to get involved with that.
Aaron, we were just talking about, you know, there's been some more public discussion about Tourette in terms of some public figures who've come out and talked about having Tourette and and dealing with that. Can you maybe touch on that?
Yeah, you know, in kind of looking at the last few years of coverage on the internet, I stumbled upon some pieces that the Globe and Mail had done around the time that Wade Belak had passed. And we all know, you know, Wade Belak was battling with depression, and unfortunately it ended up taking his life. And at the time, he was involved in a big charitable drive. His daughter's affected by Tourette syndrome, and he was involved in a big charitable drive. And after his passing, Elliot Friedman, actually, from Hockey Night in Canada, came out and spoke with the Globe and Mail and really opened up about his struggle with Tourette syndrome. And being a media figure and being on the television, how hard that is to deal with. And you know, mm-hmm. comparing it to that, you think about a student in a school who has it. When you're in elementary school, in the age of bullying and, you know, all the stuff that goes on with kids, it's tough. It's a tough thing to live with because it's something that makes you appear different. And people don't understand. And I think the more awareness and understanding that we can get out there, the better for everybody. And, you know, kids can go on living normal lives.
This is the 8th annual Trek for Tourette taking place next Sunday at Assiniboine Park. Meet at the Duck Pond starting at 8 a.m. You know, how has the event grown in the last 8 years? I mean, you know, obviously you've been raising great funds and raising awareness of Tourette for the last almost a decade now. So, you know, from your perspective, you've been involved. How have you seen the event grow? How have you seen awareness about Tourette grow in the past, you know, almost decade?
Yeah, it's been wonderful to see. It's grown every year, and we've been able to attract some celebrities like Ezra Ginsberg here to the event. You know, last year we had Mickey Moose come by and mingle with the kids. We had Buck Pierce and Keto Pobla come by in the past and really help support. So, you know, it's really heartwarming to see it become something that people are willing to talk about. And, you know, there's typically over 100 people there. You know, we're aiming to get a couple hundred people there. It would be nice. It's supposed to be a beautiful day, so... It'd be great to see it grow even further.
Well, Aaron, I think I speak for everybody. I mean, we're obviously, you know, good friends with you, and you've been a big friend of the show. And, you know, this is going to be a great event. We're happy to help you guys out. As you said, the weather is becoming beautiful out. You never know what it's going to be like in March, right? So we're tweeting out the link to the event, and we're encouraging everybody out to come out, pardon me, to this event, because it's going to raise money and awareness for a great cause.
Yeah, we just sent out the poster of the event on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. People want more information. Where can they find it? You know, I assume your social media, website, everything. Let people know where they can find more information about Trek for Tourette next Sunday.
Absolutely. The main website to go to would be www.tourette.ca, and Tourette is spelled TOURETTE.ca. And again, if you're a runner and you want to come out and participate in the 5 or 10K run or the 5K walk, you can go to runningroom.com.
Well, there you go. Aaron DeGroote joins us in studio to talk about Trek for Tourette next Sunday, 8 a.m. start time at Assiniboine Park. Head to the Duck Pond there.
Get up a little bit early there, Aaron. I'm usually up at 11 or noon on Sunday.
Yeah, are you
I'm
taking
be getting
responsibility
up early.
For waking Ezzy up?
Yeah, he's going to get some texts. He's going to get some calls for sure. And again,
no problem.
As a final word, I would say, you know, if you can't make it out, please go to Tourette.ca and kindly make a donation to the cause.
An excellent cause indeed. Big thank you to our sponsors: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and the Rady Fitness Center. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website for the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Eric for doing his great job, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Aaron DeGroot. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.